This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 13th day of March 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll check the cash grain market with Ben Pruse from the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Get an update on soybean reports, the prospective plantings, and the brand new due out in August crush report. That'll happen as we make our way through this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's check the numbers as they finished up in Chicago. For this Friday afternoon, corn futures in the March contract were down 7 cents at 375 and a quarter. The May settlement price at 380 and a half, down 8. And July futures at 388, down 7 and 3 quarters. September corn, 395 and a half, down 7 and a half. December at $4.04 and 3 quarters, down 7 cents. And March corn of next year at 413 and 3 quarters, 6 and 3 quarters lower. Soy complex down 14 cents today at $9.72 and a half in the lead March. The May at 974, 16 and a half lower. In July, 978, a settlement price down 16 cents. August at 975 and a half, 15 and a quarter lower. And November beans, $9.53 and a quarter, down 14 and a quarter. January of next year, down 14 at $9.58. Bean meal down $5.50, and the bean oil for the day finished 57 cents lower. Chicago soft red winter wheat at 508 and three quarters, down 4 and a half in the March. In July at 503 and a quarter, down 6 and a quarter. Kansas City hard red at 543 and three quarters, down 6 and three quarters of a cent. Soy complex live cattle futures 153.67 and a half, down $2. 12 and a half cents for the day in the April. June at 144.82 and a half, down $1.80. Feeder cattle finished the March $2 lower at 212.67 and a half. April at 210.97 and a half, down $1.92 and a half. And the lean hogs, April contract 25 cents lower at $62 and a nickel. The May at $71.32 and a half cents, down 92 and a half cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
Let's check the outside markets at this hour. Crude oil is trading $45.16 a barrel. That's $1.89 lower. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.71.5. That's down 6 3/10 of a cent. And the gasoline on wholesale price, RBOB, at $1.76 3/10. That's 4 6/10 of a cent lower. Natural gas at $2.73 7/10. Up 3/10 of a cent, and ethanol futures for the day are currently trading at $1.44 4/10. That's down 5 2/10 of a cent and is a settlement price on the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, 17,674, is down 192 points. The gold is up $2 at $1,154, and the U.S. dollar index at 99.411. is unchanged on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area. This afternoon, rain is likely. That'll come before 3 o'clock, so not too much longer. Cloudy, a high of 54. East-southeast winds at 3 to 6. Chance of rainfall set at 60% in the area, and that will drop to 40% of chance overnight, mainly before 4 a.m. Cloudy, a low of 43. And then tomorrow, a 10% chance of rain before 7 in the morning. Partly sunny and a high of 55. North winds at 5 to 9. Saturday night, clear and low of 33. Sunday, sunny and 59. Sunday night, clear and 41 degrees. On Monday, sunny skies and 66. Tuesday, sunny and 47. And Wednesday, it'll be 50 under sunny skies. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Ed Kieser.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. On this Friday afternoon, Mike Zuzalo joins us to take a look at the agricultural trade in Chicago. Mike, thanks so much for taking the time with us and, more importantly, for making the trip to the Beef House earlier in the week. We really did enjoy having you there.
What a great meeting and, as usual, great people, and well done to all you at the Will Radio staff and you and Dave especially, Todd. Every year it gets better and better, it seems, as far as the amount of information that gets pumped out and the comments that I get when I sit next to those the table and talk to producers. They really appreciate Will Radio, and it's nice to see that.
Well, I hope that they do, and, you know, as much as anything, our radio station and the agricultural programming in particular is about you, the analyst, and you guys all do a great job and have honed your crafts really well over the years. Speaking of which, we probably ought to see if we can plumb your craft just a little bit and see what happened in the marketplace today. There was a pretty good-sized drop in the soybeans. Why did that happen?
Well, I think in the context of the whole grain market, soybeans continue to be looked upon as the worst of the three fundamentally, and that has steadily increased ever since we've had our harvest here. And I think we're in it's a bigger picture continuation of a trend that continues to build off of the idea that supplies are going up and demand is plateauing. The stronger currency market as far as the dollar against the euro, the uncertainty about China's economy, and I think most recently maybe what really impacted a lot more this market in the later half of the week, because the USDA report didn't do anything to stop the momentum of a sell-off and going back to the bottom of a trading range. I think the biggest thing late in the week, Todd, was probably not just the advent of knowledge about the avian flu strain showing up here in the United States, which you talked about earlier in the week, but also now, once again, we have China's flock with the even more deadly H7N9 strain, and now we're getting reports that in some key large poultry-producing areas, China's closing its live poultry trade. It sounds like, and I don't have this confirmed quite yet, but it sounds like in a way they've never done before, because the mortality rate, we don't have this strain in the United States. The mortality rate on this H7N9 is about 33% to 35%, and several humans have died just in the last week in the eastern provinces of China. And so I think the trade is seeing this, coupled with the macroeconomics, coupled with the South American harvest, no Brazilian trucker strike, and no USDA report to come in and save the day like USDA and their reports have done in the past. And as a result, we've got the lowest price in Nov beans since February 11th, trading back around that 950 level.
And it might be important at this point to note that there is a different strain, as you mentioned, in China of the bird flu than there is in the United States. That strain in our area making its way through Missouri and Arkansas, but in other states in the U.S., and if the information I've read is correct, the strain in the United States has not at least made a jump into humans. That doesn't mean it's not possible, but at least at this point it has not. So bird flu is there, but from different perspectives and across the planet, it makes a difference in the way trade takes place in both poultry and then, of course, in commodities like soybeans and corn, and how much is being shipped and exported. So China has been a big user of export of soybean meal from the United States. Do we have an idea how much of that goes to feed poultry and how much of it might go to feed hogs in that nation?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to probably see over 80% or close to 80% being fed to the hog side of the equation. I mean, 80% of what China imports as far as soybeans gets crushed into meal that not really needed for the vegetable oil market as much as it is for the livestock. And I think the key about this United States disease, especially for the livestock producers listening right now, what I've seen since I've returned from my road trip, the H5N2 is what we have. It's highly pathogenic. And what that means, and this goes back to a year 2000 study from the Southeast Poultry Research Laboratory that I dug up, was highly pathogenic means it's extremely infectious. It's a systemic viral disease, and guess what? It has high mortality. So based upon the research I've done, there's very little you can do once you have it. And I think what the trade has assumed this week, rightly, is that you're going to have lower feed consumption, and you, as you say, the meal and the corn. Yeah. But what I think they've assumed wrongly is that because barriers of export bans for our poultry will be put up, we're going to have a backwash of poultry and meat into the domestic market, and it's going to hurt the hog production, hurt the hog consumption and pork consumption because chicken producers are going to have to cut their prices. I would really challenge that based upon the science I've looked at, Todd, that you're probably not going to have the meat there. The bird is probably not going to make it to slaughter weight to put it into the system. And so I think this is something the hog producers really want to watch because we tested that $61 low from, I think, February, just this week, just yesterday, and we bounced off that pretty nicely. I think this might be a very strong case being built here for a possible low in the hogs if the trade realizes that this H5N2 is actually killing birds, not moving it into the domestic meat.
Yeah, so even if it's not killing the birds, it is high pathogenicity, which I think is the word I tried to pronounce about 4,000 times yesterday and finally got through it.
Right.
But that the fact of the matter is a flock with this bird flu, this version of the bird flu, is usually euthanized and does not go into the human consumption, and it simply does not go in for human consumption. So that'll create a vacuum of sort, is what you're telling me, for other meats to fill.
Exactly. Some of the numbers I read was the high mortality rate could be as much as 90%. You're talking about a PED-type virus for the chicken and turkey flock here in the United States if it spreads. And this is the dangerous game we play now. It's springtime, and a lot of the scientists that track this avian flu say this is about the worst time to have this come because the birds, like the geese, are moving from the south to the north again. So you've got it in Arkansas and Missouri, and you've also got a little bit of it in Minnesota, and you've got some in the Northwest Territory. So it could be very easily spread at this stage just by the migration patterns from different rivers and basins. And so, not to belabor this point so much, but I think hog producers have to really watch this so that we're not putting in place a break in prices that makes them want to just cut their production completely because they think we're just going to have all this poultry come to market and compete with them. That's what I've seen since I've come back as far as news wire information and news information in general. I would challenge that and do some digging before making big production decisions.
Dan, Mike, thanks so much, and we appreciate all you do for us.
You too, Todd. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Mike Zuzlow is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison in Kansas. Joins us on this Friday afternoon to take a look at the marketplace. Now here's Dave Dickey, your Director of Ag Programming, with today's Ag News.
In agricultural news, congressional Republicans are said to be considering allowing crude oil exports and increasing energy production on federal lands as a way to raise funding for surface transportation programs. ConocoPhillips estimates that lifting the export ban, which was put in place in 1975 following the Arab oil embargo, would raise an estimated $1.3 billion in government revenue. The International Energy Agency today says that the rally in global oil prices in February from January lows to range-bound trade in March seems to have marked a pause. The Paris-based agency says a key driver in the rally to higher crude prices were steep weekly declines in the U.S. rig count, but the IEA says the supply in the U.S. shows precious little sign of slowing down. The IEA says U.S. oil production was up 115,000 barrels per day in February. The IEA expects crude oil inventory building in the U.S. to slow in the second quarter as the refinery maintenance season comes to an end and refiners begin to consume more crude oil. The Illinois Beef Association says a statewide referendum to restart the Illinois beef checkoff passed with an 88% majority. The referendum spanned 12 days in February, with cattle owners across the state casting ballots by mail, in person at local FSA offices, and in person at the 2015 Illinois Beef Expo. The Illinois Beef Checkoff was originally created by state statute in 1983, 3 years before the start of the national $1 beef checkoff. The Illinois Beef Checkoff is different from the national checkoff in three ways. The state checkoff is voluntary. All money collected stays in Illinois, and the state checkoff has more flexibility. Russia's central bank cut its key interest rate today by 1 percentage point to 14% in an attempt to support the economy, which is sliding into a brutal recession. It is the second interest rate cut in as many months as the central bank reverses some of the sharp rate increases it made in December when it hiked them from 10.5% to 17%. To support the then-collapsing ruble. The bank predicts Russia's economy will shrink by 3.5% to 4% this year. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. That second program comes up on our home station just after this program, so stay with us if you can. If not, many of these radio stations air it tomorrow, and you can always find it on our website at willag.org. This week, a special edition will bring you an excerpt from the All-Day Ag Outlook Corn Panel that included Jackie Vakes and Bill Gentry, along with Pete Manhart and Dan Zwicker, a special program, so you can pick it up there on our website. Also, you'll be able to click on the calendar and find a couple of upcoming events. Next Monday night, we'll be at the Farm Credit Illinois building starting at 6:30 with John Newton, who you're going to hear in just a moment. He's an ag economist, a commodity market specialist at the U of Y. He'll kick off at 6:30 p.m. and then at 7 o'clock, Merrill Crowley, Bill Gentry, and Wayne Nelson will join me to take up the commodity markets. That's next Monday evening at the Farm Credit Illinois building right there in Mahomet, right off Prairie View Road exit. You'll find it really quickly and simply starts at 6:30. That one's open to everyone and free. So I hope that you join us next Monday evening. You know, farmers and the trade are really concerned the price of soybeans will fade over the next 6 months. There are a couple of mileposts indicators most will be watching as it relates to the production of soybeans. University of Illinois ag economist John Newton says the next one up is the prospective plantings report that's due March the 31st from the United States Department of Agriculture.
You know, the prospective planting's a big one. Getting an idea of farmers' intentions on plantings for next year. And then, you know, I'm going to continue to watch the crush, continue to watch soybean exports, because not only are we on pace to export a record volume this year, but USDA and their Ag Outlook actually projected exports to increase again next year. So back-to-back record soybean exports. So that's something to monitor. Can we continue to consume soybeans at the level we are? And if we can, then that should provide some price floor and positive price pressure from where we are today.
Exports are reported weekly by USDA, and starting in August, the Ag Department will begin reporting the soybean crush totals monthly. The agency is picking up and tweaking a discontinued Census Bureau report.
And that should help to get some idea on the pace of soybean crush. Another thing to keep in mind is, and Daryl and Scott had a Farm Doc Daily article about this a couple days ago, is what happens with the RFS. You know, are we going to get to the point where we're crushing soybeans for oil? And then what are the implications then on soybean meal prices, and how does that offset corn feed and residual on the corn balance sheet? So these are all things to kind of watch. I mean, some of these are long-run things that you keep an eye on, and some are short-run things. You know, the pace of consumption and soybean crush being those two short-run things I'm watching.
You may read more from the University of Illinois Ag Economist on the FarmDoc Daily website. A new article is posted there each business day of the year. A couple of quick reminders. Do visit our website at willag.org. When you get there, you'll find all, not yet, but very soon, all of the panel discussions held at the All Day Ag Outlook. Those will be posted over the weekend in their entirety at willag.org. And don't forget to check out the calendar. Two events upcoming still, one on Monday evening at the Farm Credit Illinois building in Mahomet, and one on the Prospective Plantings Grain Stocks Day. That's March 31st. That's in Sherman, Illinois. I'm also at the Farm Credit Illinois building.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
At this hour on a Friday, we normally would talk with Ben Pruce of the Andersons out of their Everly, Iowa facility. He is not available this afternoon, so I'll take you through a couple of other things. Earlier today, I had an email conversation, a very short one, with Lance Honig, who's the chief of the crops branch at USDA NASS. I sent him a note wanting to know just how many samples or surveys were sent out in the states of Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, and such. He gladly sent back to me a map. So there are some 83,679 surveys that are sent out in the month of March to find out what spring plantings, those prospective plantings numbers, might look like from farmers across the entirety of the nation. He expects that about 80% of those surveys will be returned and filled in. That means there are a lot of folks that are making some phone calls, because I don't think that 80% of them would come back in the mail. But out of 83,679, 80% are expected to come back. So how many of them come from the Midwest and would be counting corn and soybean acreage? These are the numbers and the way they appear from USDA. So the survey sample size in the state of Ohio, 2011, Wisconsin, 1,903, Indiana, 2,383, Illinois, 3,012, Iowa, 2,921, Nebraska, 3,752, Minnesota at 3,263, and the Dakotas, North Dakota, 3,247, South Dakota, 2,946, and get this, Kansas has a really big number at 4,288. So those are what the numbers look like. Again, Illinois and Iowa at around 3,000 apiece, 3,012 in Illinois and 2,921. Those are the surveys USDA sends out each and every year. This year, there are a total of 83,679, of which Lance Honig tells me he expects to see about 80% of those to be filled in. Giving the results will be delivered to us for the prospective plantings report. That report is due out at 11 a.m. on the 31st day of March. We can keep up with that as we make our way through the end of the month of March, and you can find us at willag.org.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's National Coconut Torte Day. The torte originated in Linz, Austria, and the recipe dates back to at least 1653. It was Johann Vogel, born in 1796, who eventually began to mass-produce torts around the world. On this day in agricultural history in 1813, Lorenzo Domenico was born in Switzerland, a famed restaurateur. In 1851, he joined his uncles in their catering and pastry shop in New York City. He transformed the business into one of the most famous restaurants in the country. Domenico's was one of the first continuously run restaurants in the U.S. It was the first in the nation with a separate wine list, and famous patrons included Theodore Roosevelt, Mark Twain, Charles Dickens, Oscar Wilde, and J.P. Morgan. In 1915, Wilbert Robinson, manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers, attempted to catch a baseball dropped from an airplane. But someone had substituted a grapefruit instead, which virtually exploded in his glove on impact, covering him with grapefruit pulp and juice. And in 2006, Robert C. Baker died at the age of 84. While a poultry and food professor at Cornell University from 1949 to 1989, he developed chicken nuggets, turkey ham, poultry hot dogs, and many other products. He founded Cornell's Institute of Food Science and Marketing in 1970, and in 2004 was inducted into the American Poultry Hall of Fame. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.
I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser with a look at the weather for corn and soybean production in South America. Generally quiet weather prevailed this past week in Argentina and South Brazil, while showers and thunderstorms continue to cause delays farther north in the double crop areas of Brazil. In Argentina, mostly dry and very warm to hot weather gave fields soaked by heavy rains late last month in San Luis, Cordoba, and Santa Fe a chance to dry out. The extent of damage from flooding rains is not yet known. For other areas that weren't soaked last month, fields are turning dry. The forecast for Argentina is for a continuation of mostly dry to very warm weather into the middle of next week. Then some rain is likely with the passage of a cold front late in the week. Most corn and soybeans are now maturing and beyond the prime moisture-sensitive stage. However, some later planted crops still in the reproductive stage may experience some yield losses from dry weather in the coming week. In South Brazil, mostly dry weather this past week helped corn harvest reach around one-half complete across Rio Grande do Sul. The soybean harvest there is just getting underway. Early indications point to an excellent crop in Rio Grande do Sul. A little farther north in Paraná, crops also look good. Fields across Paraná are now just drying out enough for harvest progress to get into full swing. The forecast for all of South Brazil and neighboring Paraguay is for dry weather through much of next week. That means there will be a long stretch of open weather for harvest progress. The next chance of widespread rain does not appear likely before the end of next week. Farther north, rain fell on at least a few days in the past week across most of center-west, southeast, and northeast Brazil. The rain maintained delays to first crop harvesting and second crop corn planting. Improvement is finally on the way as rainfall coverage and amounts will drop off in the coming week. That will allow for better field access. In Mato Grosso, the largest second crop corn-producing state, planting is not yet done. More than a third of that crop will be planted so late that it runs a real risk of not reaching the moisture-sensitive pollination stage until after the dry season starts. Typically, that's in late April and early May. That is your South American weather update. I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser. We'll be right back.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.